you were talking about the jaguars?
Jaguars, yes, the black jaguars. Well, another interesting person we met was in Indonesia was Helmi Usman. And he accompanied me when I went to get the proboscis monkeys. But we also arranged to get our Komodo dragons. And Helmi Usman is a native Indonesian, a very dear friend. And later he shipped our Komodo dragons to San Diego. We made several trips to collect those for us. But we all arranged this when I was over there on the Borneo expedition. In fact, I went out with him one time. We went to the Komodo Islands there, and we couldn't land. The wind was so bad and the water was so rough, we couldn't land. We had to come back to Surabaya in Java. But later he went, and they set traps, you know, to get those Komodo dragons. They're not easy to catch. They're very vicious. He was a very good naturalist. He was he worked for the city of Surabaya, had 500 people working for him. And when I went over there, he took a little vacation and took me all over Indonesia. And it was a very wonderful friend. And he did a lot for us, too. Well, I just want to mention Zunus. In 1926 was the first issue of Zunus for the San Diego Zoo. And we had many editors, but again, we must remember some of the early editors like Ken Stock. And, you know, it was just a small little publication. We didn't have any money. We didn't have any color. It was about 1965 before we ever got color, which really helped it. And again, the curators and the staff were writing articles for it. And but the early Adley Harwell was one of the early editors. And then, of course, Edna Hubland came, and she was there about 20 years. Now, Marjorie Betsy is doing a splendid job. Marjorie Shaw.
Marjorie Shaw.
Yes. She's doing a fine job as editor of the Zoo News. And I think today the Zoo News is a wonderful publication. When we have 180,000 members or something.
Right.
Well, in those early days, we had 5,000. So you see, money helps when you get a big subscription.
So it's good for funds.
It's for funds, yes. And it's on the publication. But it's a beautiful magazine. But I think some of the old timers need a little pat on the back once in a while, too. And even people like you, you know, you never knew these people.
No.
But I did, and they were a part of my life, and a part of the zoo's life in its early history. And you mention these names, and people had no idea who they were or what they did, and they were all, you know, a real part of it in its development.
Can you tell me something about some of these people? Ken Stock, and
well, Ken Stock started, you know. Well, last month, Zunu, he wrote a little history. I mean, he started when he was about 6, 7 years old. And he grew up here in San Diego. He's a very good zoologist. He's emeritus, zoologist emeritus, still on the staff. Writes wonderful articles. Very well trained. He graduated from San Diego State. And a very fine person. Adley Harwell, when Martin and Osa Johnson bought the two big gorillas in the 30s, the mountain gorillas, Adley Harwell took care of them. That's a long time ago. But she was a very important person in those days. And those guerrillas wouldn't have survived if they hadn't been for people like this.
Mm-hmm. Can't tell me about any other people, any important contributors from the early times.
Well, we had many people that made small donations, you know, that helped to the union. Henry Kramer, Kramer Bakery here in San Diego, his own Point Loma, he made several contributions to the San Diego Union.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very interested in game birds, pheasants, partridges, quail, and he made many contributions to the San Diego Union.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we belong to different organizations, I was a charter member of the American Pheasant and Waterfowl Society. In 1936, I became a member. And I was president several times. Now it's a very large organization, like the American Association of Zoological Parks, national.
Mm-hmm.
And I belonged to the International Waterfowl Association. I was elected to the Explorers Club. And Mrs. Frank, Charles Lindbergh, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But as you belong to all these different organizations and their contact, each has their own group, see?
Mm-hmm.
2,000 members, 2,000 members here. American Ornithologist Union, or Cooper Ornithology, Ornithologist Union. As you belong to all these different organizations, I say, you're in contact with many people.
Mm-hmm.
And this all helps.
In what way?
Well, this is national and international. They live in, Montana, or they live in Florida. I used to have a Dr. Penner, he used to be at the University of Connecticut. He was doing a research project down in Florida. He sent me anhingas. So, you know, all these contacts that you have are so beneficial, and people don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got many of our fine specimens. And this is what made the San Diego Zoo great.
So contacts throughout the country and
throughout
the world.
Throughout the world, uh-huh. Right. Dr. Delacour, which I mentioned, he's a nobleman in France. He has a beautiful 13th century castle in Clarens in Normandy. Joan of Arc was incarcerated in this castle before they killed her.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to ship him emus and rheas, and he would send me cranes and other things, and flamingos, things that he was raising. And this was in trade, exchange.
Mm-hmm.
In France, Air France, isolated turkey, and some things he couldn't get, and very good exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, as you know people all over the world, this is wonderful.
So it's a very good system of contact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At the zoo, what type of major changes happened while you were there?
Oh, I think the escalator and the sky safari, and of course the children's zoo. I was in the Wild Animal Park in 72.
Mm-hmm.
Of course that was Dr. Schroeder's zoo, you know. But what most people don't know that all the staff and everybody else worked on this 10 years before that ever opened. This was like in 62
mm-hmm.
to 72. We had meetings, we had discussions, planning. 10 years preparation before that park ever opened out there in 72.
So it was quite a project.
It was a project. It was beautiful. But I'm happy it's turned out so well, and it is.
Mm-hmm. And still growing.
And Dr. Dolan is such a fine mammalogist, you know. He's a very important person. He was educated in Germany. Speaks German fluently. Mammalogist. He came, and I had him work in my department 10 years. Came in 62, worked to 72 with birds.
Mm-hmm.
And I trained him a few things about birds, 10 years. And then he moved to the Waterloo Park, but by education, he's a mammalogist. Mm-hmm. He's a taxonomist, really, is what he is by profession. And well trained. But put the Waterloo Park on the map, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably the only person that could have done it in the world. We're very fortunate to have him.
Right.
Very fortunate. No.
Okay, you mentioned that there were only 12 employees at the zoo when you first started. Can you tell me about employees as the years went by? How many did it, was there an increase in manpower? And how did this go about?
Well, it was actually the employees didn't increase until after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the attendance increased and everything, then they needed more employees. And they built food stands and things like this. You see, before that we didn't have it. And we didn't need employees. And now the big administration buildings and things in the hospital has grown. And, one time the hospital had 2 people up there, now they must have 40 some of them.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way all over the administration. So the attendance and the budget required that they get more people. But it wasn't until after World War II that really, and then it started increasing every year. Then the union came in and then they even had it increase more because they wanted the members to pay their dues, you know. When we were small, the union wasn't interested in saying they could do it all.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute they started making money, and then they came, they went apart.
What type of changes did the union bring to the zoo?
Oh, many changes. But now it's, you know, it's much easier to work there. They don't work such long hours. They have 3 people for every job. You know. So it's quite different.
Mm-hmm. Were you happy with the union?
The staff never had to join the union. It's just the keepers.
Mm-hmm.
I never belonged to unions. Now, personally, I don't like unions.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, they make too many demands.
Mm-hmm. Were there any conflicts that you had with the union?
Not really.
No.
Well, they used to object that when I worked 12 hours. They didn't like that when I was working 12 hours a day. I had birds to take care of, and I did it. I mean, I don't really care if they liked it or not. You know. But I wasn't on, I didn't have to work so many hours. I mean, I could work 40 hours, as many hours I wanted to work.
So did this cause any conflict with your employees?
No,
with
not
the,
really.
With the union?
Not really.
No.
Not really. No. Not really. But it's probably a good thing that there's no question about that. We didn't make much money when we started there. I think I started out at $100 a month, which wasn't too much.
Mm-hmm.
I just came out of college. Now they start, the college graduates today, they get $25,000 a year. A little bit different.
Quite a bit. Quite a bit.
times were very difficult.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your wages, about the zoo, like in comparison with other zoos, what other departments?
Well, I think that they're pretty much the same with all zoos, because this is why they know them now. There might be a few zoos that the wages are different because of the cost of living. Some of the southern zoos probably a little less. But all the major zoos are pressing the same amount of money. So much in our and curated staff members. Other countries, they're not as high. Australia, New Zealand, Africa. Wages are low, but then the cost of living is lower.
Right.
In Europe. Denmark. So you have to take that into consideration.
Can you tell me something about the funds, the money that went into the zoo? How did money come into the zoo as the years went by?
Well, it was still mostly donations, but then of course, when they had that little prize of 25 cents admission, that wasn't much money.
Mm-hmm.
Even with thousands of people, that wasn't much money.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still pretty much, even today, the donations is a large part of it. Well, what they call it, the development office, I guess it is now. And then people leave wills and things, money in their estates, which all help.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get too much of that in those days. And of course, their restaurants, their food stands, they all make money. Machines, Coca-Cola machines, Pepsi, all make money. On a busy day, they say those little Pepsi cola machines make $1,000. One little machine. And we have many, in the zoo, ground. So this is income. But you need all this income. Overall. Well, I know when Dr. Schroeder, I think when he left, or when he came, the budget was about 500,000. And now it's like 40 million annual budget. So, see how it's going, how costs have increased. It's hard to realize, really, it's that big. I think SeaWorld and San Diego Zoo are pretty close, each have $40 or $50 million budget. And of course, the San Diego Zoo is the number one tourist attraction for all these years in San Diego. Of all the things in San Diego, the San Diego Zoo has always been number one for tourists.
You still feel that way?
Oh, yes. I still take people over there. They're still getting many. There's still a lot of people in the United States that never have been to the San Diego Zoo. You've got to realize. In fact, there's people right here in San Diego, in the city itself, that never have been to the San Diego Zoo, and this is hard to believe, but they are.
Still a big tourist spot, though.
Oh, yes. But, they get excellent publicity and advertising, all this and all part of it.
How was advertising in the old days? How did people know about the zoo?
Word of mouth, mostly.
So mainly it was local?
Local.
Not too many tourists from out of state? Yeah.
No, until we got the Zoorama program. Then it went national, you see. And that exposed it.
So that's when it really exploded within the
50s? Yeah, after that. Mm-hmm. Well, that was in 1951. That we started to do that.
So that was a big boost.
Oh, yes. Well, I might mention the opossum birds. We brought those back from Australia in 58, I think. There's still one living. And we raised, we propagated in longer family remedy. And I brought four back from Australia, and when they were in the rainforest and they propagated them. One of the mud nest builders. And we used to put pans of mud, and they carry the mud up and line the nest with mud and grass. And a mud nest builder, what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And a bird that I really liked it in the jay. But a possum bird, it's got its name because in Australia they usually go around in groups of 12. Apostles in the Bible. And that's how they got their name.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Nate is a great jumper, but most everybody calls him apostles. Out of the kookaburra, you've heard of the kookaburra, and I brought some of them back too. And we raised many, over 100 kookaburras. And they're, you know, they laugh loud. And if you go to Australia, the first thing you hear when you land, you're almost at the airport, are cuckoo birds. Because they'll be up there laughing. They're really a kingfisher. It's a giant kingfisher, is what it really is.
Mm-hmm.
One of the mice and lizards. And they don't eat fish. But yeah, they belong to kingfishers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was on a trip with Sir Edward Hallstrom, which I've mentioned before, from Sydney. And we took a trip up in the Blue Mountains from east of Sydney, about 50 miles. And we brought back, there was a couple of tawny frog mouths sitting on a big tree there on the trunk. They're nocturnal birds. So I said, Sir Edward, I want to get out a minute. Now I got out of his car and walked right over there and picked them up. This is in daylight.
Mm-hmm.
They're nocturnal birds. And the tawny frog mouth is like our whippoorwill, and it has a great big mouth. Big, very large bird. Four times the size of our whippoorwill, our poor one here in California. And eat mice.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought that pair of birds that I just caught there in broad daylight. I brought them back, and we raised several generations up at the zoo. And even when she's on eggs, when they have two, and I used to just give her little pinky mice, and then she'd take it and feed the little chick in the nest.
Mm-hmm.
But she'd be sitting on the nest with the baby with the chick, you see. Very tame birds.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice birds. But I think it felt very interesting that you could catch those things that way without even using a trap or a net or anything. Oh, you just walk up there and pick them up. If you're observant.
Uh-huh. Yes. What was the hardest bird that you ever had to catch?
Oh, I think probably the ground cuckoos in Indonesia. They live in very, very dense shrubby country. They're very hard to get. Some of the thrushes and things are very secretive too, you know, like shaman thrushes. Some of the songbirds are very difficult to get. Because they're insectivorous. And there's plenty of insects where they live. So, I mean, I'm going along there trying to entice one with a mealworm or something. Well, there's all kinds of termites and other insects flying around, so they're not even going to bother my little mealworm. You know, this is like trying to get a bird that eats fruit, and you offer him half an orange or half an apple. And he's got a tree full of all kinds of small, delicious little fruits. Well, he's not going to leave those and come down there and go into a trap with it, where you've got a half a piece of fruit land. Mm-hmm. No, this is what makes it difficult sometimes.
So it's quite frustrating sometimes.
Oh, it is. But there's lots of tricks, you know, many tricks. In Borneo, you know, you set snares and things to catch pheasants and things. Or in your country, in the Philippines, there are the beautiful polyworm peacock pheasants. You sit there, which catch them by the foot as they go along. But there's many, many little tricks in that. But it was fun. I had many, many good years. Well, I think we'll wind this up. Okay.